Get up and take a deep breath. That was an excellent meal. Appreciate the food and all the cooks. It was great. Just wonderful. And I know you're tired. I'll try not to belabor. There's so many points in Scripture. There's just so much there, just all the time. You know, preachers, when we start out, we have, at least if you're like me, you have a hard time coming up with something to say. Now, that's the fact of the matter. Now, I just had a hard time when I was a young preacher deciding on what to preach, trying to come up with material that I thought was good. First of all, just have anything. That was the first problem. The second problem was making it, relevant and good. But just coming up with something. The more you study the Scriptures and the longer you live, of course, the more you understand it's just almost like it's just an inexhaustible supply of material there, if you're willing to spend some time. And that was the problem in being a young preacher, because you did not necessarily want to spend a whole lot of time. You want to spend some time, but not a whole lot of time in study, because study's work. Study takes time and effort. But at any rate, there's just so much here. And I want to mention a few points this afternoon. We often talk about, of course, our dependency upon God for all that we have and all that we are. And that's very, very true. And the gospel stresses man's need. You cannot work out, you cannot get to heaven by yourself. Let's say it like that. You can work out your own salvation in a sense, but that takes God's help. You have to always have, you're completely dependent upon God. And yet, on the other side of that coin is an equally important point regarding man's capacity to comprehend and to understand and to differentiate. We're not just monkeys. We're not cows and horses and pigs and donkeys. We're people made in the image of God. Now, sure, because of our free will and because of temptation, we commit sin, and therein lies our problem. But we can recognize things, whether we're Christians or not. Made in the image of God, we ought to be able to make a lot of distinctions. And so I've raised several questions this afternoon regarding, can you tell the difference? Can you tell the difference? Can you tell the difference, for example, between design and accident? You know, it's so simple in a way. Maybe you've been to a car show, or you've been to the mall, or you've been to the car dealer, and you stand there and you look at the new models and you see the lines and the design, the form, the shape, and how everything seems to be on the cutting edge, you know, of comprehension. Or maybe you're amazed at a new skyscraper or building and architecture, something like that. And when we look at those things, we are fascinated by the fact that somebody had to think through that. Somebody had to design that. Now, if you go out here in the middle of the road and you see two cars up against each other in crumpled form, now we don't say that's designed. We say, well, we have an accident here. An accident. There's something striking about the images that we can tell the difference between something that was supposed to be there, like it is, and something that got into a shape that it was not intended to express. So simple. Accident. Design. And that's the basis of our comprehension of creation and the universe. Just this past week in the news, it said we sent up another unmanned space vehicle going to Mars. Going to Mars. You see, people on the earth, we're still fascinated. We're fascinated by the heavens. Now, the heavens are for God, the psalmist said. God made earth for man. He lets us probe. We can't live there, except as we keep our atmosphere with us. We can't live there. Earth's for that. But God lets us probe. Look into it. See what it's like. And people are still fascinated by the design and the size of the universe. Light years we talk about between planets. Light years. How long it takes, you know, you to get there. If you were traveling at the speed of light, what is it, 184,000 miles a second? And you count that in years. And we to get to the outer reaches of the universe, you know, light years. It's incredible even to think about it. So we look at it all and we say, well, it's not just fascinating. It's fascinating because we can see, we ought to be able to see that there's a great humongous design entailed in this superstructure, the macrocosm. And then we come down to the drop of water, and you get that under a microscope and you look at the microscopic world. And if you're in a science class and you're a young lad about, you know, in the 7th or 8th grade, and you begin to look at that, my, there's a world right there. There's a world out there in the macrocosm, and there's a world in the microcosm. It's just fascinating, and it's stirring, and the heavens declare the glory of God. And God is going to hold all of us accountable because of the fact that we could tell the difference between design and accident. One thing atheists do sometimes when they're faced with the obvious, and design is obvious, you'll do what Dr. Flew did in his debate with Brother Warren, when Brother Warren had a chart with a mechanical hand on it. Mechanical. And then he had a picture of a human hand. Not just the one that resembles the real one, but here's the real one. Now, Dr. Flew, what about this mechanical hand? Was it made? Was it designed? Well, yes, it was made. That's the way it is. What about the human hand? He would not say it was made. All he would say is, and first to use the word, use bad grammar on purpose, he said it just growed. It grew. Is that an explanation for a hand, for your body, for a newborn baby in the womb? Can you tell there's any design in the womb when doctors probe and they take these images, you know? Or do you just say, well, it just grew? Isn't that an expression of design? How something grows? That has the expression of design all over it. The very fact that it's growing. So that's not a dodge at all. It just grew, so he said. But I'm telling you, God knows that all of us humans can tell the difference between accident and design, and we're going to be held accountable for it. Number two, can you tell the difference then between normal literature and profundity? What about that? What about when people write? When people write good books, you know, some novels are interesting. History, some history books are important given their accuracy, their degree of accuracy. But you can tell the difference, can you not, between something that somebody writes, even a smart man, he can only come up to the level, you know, of his himself. That's all he can do. And when it's not very high. And yet you pick up a Bible like this, and if you are engaged and you're honest and you're searching for truth, this opens up a new world to you. You know, reading opens up a world. Just getting a book and you can go places you've never been. Think about thoughts you've never had and get involved with people you've never seen and history way back yonder. My goodness, just reading opens up a new world. But reading the Bible opens up all kinds of things because it has in it the capacity to answer my most desperate questions. My most intimate questions, my most pressing questions, they're answered here. And the way that it lines out the answers is told in a story of a developing scheme of redemption that involves God and Christ and the Spirit and the prophets of old and all men everywhere and the cross of Christ. And it's an amazing story. You can understand it and you can tap into it. And then all of these things that are written to churches and individuals, and they talk about things that I have questions about. How does this work? How does this work? And how does this? And God answers so many of my questions. The book is not just antiquitous, but it's informative, it's relevant, it's comprehensive, it's profound, it's self-authenticating, it's enriching. You can come up with a lot of other words, adjectives, to describe the way the Bible is. And I'm telling you, if you get the Quran and read some of that, or you get the Book of Mormon and you read some of that, you'll see a world of difference. These so-called religions that I've got a holy book too. You call that a holy book? Have you thought about what it says? Would you like to defend that in public? What it says? And I was mentioning last Wednesday night the Book of Mormon. You know, it's just pitiful. Just pitiful what it tries to put off as truth that contradicts the Bible. And yet it wants to recognize the Messiahship of Jesus, but it just also wants to give modern day revelation. The Church of Jesus Christ of modern day saints or latter day saints. Well, there's a difference in the books. Can you tell the difference? Well, you have to be interested enough to want to know the difference. Don't just accept every book that comes down the pike in which there's a claim that it's from God. None is except the Bible. Number three, can you tell the difference between Jesus and all of the prophets? Now, I'm not just talking about the fake prophets, the false prophets. I'm talking about even the good ones. I'm talking about Isaiah and Jeremiah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Joel, Amos, on and on. John. Jesus once said, Matthew 11, John is more than a prophet. Wonder what all he meant by that. But he said that. What went you out to see? Was he a prophet? He was more than a prophet. But Jesus was more than John, the Son of God. Can you tell the difference between Jesus and the others? Well, if you know the Bible, you can. If you read what he said and what he did, you can. Otherwise, it's just a blur, I suppose. But there is a difference between Jesus and the others, because as those in his day saw, though his contemporaries, he doesn't even talk like the rabbis. He does not present himself just like another man. The prophets, you know, who spoke by the authority of the Spirit, still were just men. But Jesus, when he spoke as God does speak, with authority that was self-contained. Can you tell, number four, the difference between the church and any other religious group? You may have to raise a question or two to see what the convictions are at this place. You may have to do that. But can you tell? After your investigation has concluded, can you say, this is a body or a family of God's people in this geographical location? Or can you say, this is a false group? This is a bad imitation. Can you tell the difference? If you know the Scriptures, you ought to be able to. But if you don't know the Scriptures, how in the world would you? And that's the problem. Why do people simply allow all of these claims to appear to be true? This denomination, yes, we are a part of the church. This denomination, yes, we are a part of the church. Why does the world glory in that diversity? See, this is a wonderful thing. Got all these kinds of religions here. And you can just get the church of your choice. But can you tell the difference between original, ancient, primitive? These are the kinds of words the reformers sometimes used. The original Christianity, primitive Christianity, uncontaminated Christianity, the ancient gospel of Christ. Can you tell the difference? Only if you know the Scriptures. If you know the Scriptures, you ought to be able to see that. Can you tell the difference between argument and assertion? You should be able to, because argument gives reasons. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 21, proof. We give arguments. We try to give proof, set it up in logical form. Romans 12, 1 and 2. An assertion is just saying something is so. I need to go to town. That's an assertion. I am a Christian. That is assertion. I am the devil. That is an assertion. Whether it's true or false, it's just an assertion. But when you start saying, because of this, because of that, you're giving evidence And you're trying to support a conclusion. Can't you tell the difference? If you listen to controversy, can you tell who's proving his case and who is not? Jesus always proved his case. And yet some people didn't see it, didn't admit it. Never for lack or failure on Jesus' part, but because something was wrong in the way that they were considering it. But I guarantee you, there is a great difference between assertion and argument. Can you tell the difference between informed love and mere sentiment? When you watch all these Christmas shows this time of the year, I like to watch some of them. They're cute. And some of them, you know, they really get to you. The way that the story is told, the script, you know, these people doing these nice things for each other. I like to watch shows like that. And they do pull at your heart. They really, really do. And not that it represents Christianity, but it has to do with humanity. People made in the image of God doing nice things for others of the same species. And we ought to be doing things like that. And yet people sometimes will look at that as though that somehow can become a substitute for Christianity. See, that's why you look at a community and you want everybody to be nice. And you get together with people in the community and you smile and you shake hands and you're nice and you joke and you have fun. You say, boy, this is great. And it is. As long as we don't talk about what matters most. And as long as we stay away from that, this is just like Mayberry. But if you ever get involved in the other, boy, you have to be very, 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 very careful. And I try to be very careful. Because still, even being careful, people still are disinterested. They're just not going to do it. They don't want to talk about it. I can tell the difference between pure religion, you know, and just being sweet and nice. And I'd rather live in a community where people like each other and can laugh and joke and have fun together. I'd much rather be in a situation like that than not know my neighbor or know him and wish I didn't. I'd rather be in a situation like this. But just looking at that, that's what you're seeing in these Christmas movies. People just being nice and loving and kind. Oh my, that's... But they're not really engaged in the contrariness of the competing views that are in the heads of those people. That's what Jesus dealt with. Jesus came and He got to the rock bottom of the issues of life. And He died for it. That's the way the devil does, and that's the way the world does. God is looking for those hearts that want to be informed. Not just sentimental and can cry when a puppy dog gets run over. Made in the image of God, you ought to be able to, you know, sorrow with those who sorrow. Just because you're made in the image of God. Because you have feelings. But that's not Christianity in and of itself. This is the love of God. That you keep His commandments. And His commandments are not grievous. That's the church. 1 John 5 and verse 3. Let me wrap this up. Can you tell the difference between the gospel and all religious messages? You should, if you know the scriptures. 1 Thessalonians 2:13, Romans 1:16. Do you know the difference between right and wrong? Well, you ought to if you're made in the image of God. And then if you study the scriptures, you ought to be able to tell. Can you tell the difference between life and death? You ought to be able to do that. There are some things that are just obvious. Obvious when you know. Obvious if you pay attention. Obvious if you're informed. Otherwise, just about everything's a blur. It's all clear to God. And as long as I stay with God and read His thoughts after Him, it gets clearer to me.